The Arctic Refuge is something that is not only held in esteem, but is beloved.
House Democrats continue the fight against opening ANWR. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Senator Sullivan supports a bill to let the VA research cannabis uses.
I think there's kind of a combination of people seeing the medical benefits, but also 10th Amendment elements of this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com.
If Democrats take control of the U.S. House in November, as many pollsters predict, the fate of some of Alaska's biggest resource priorities could rest with someone most Alaskans have never heard of. Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva is in line to become chairman of the House Resources Committee if the chamber switches hands. And he said today that a bill to close the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling will be at the top of his list. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin takes a look at who Grijalva is and what he wants for the 49th state.
I wanted to thank everybody and thank you for making the time.
If the Democrats take the House, Grijalva will likely have grand hearing rooms available to him. He'll be able to call formal proceedings on subjects he wants to draw attention to. But now, he's just in a meeting room in a House office building. He's holding what's billed as a forum on the Arctic Refuge.
What's going on right now in Washington and with this administration is critically important to all of us. The Arctic Refuge is something that is not only held in esteem, but is a beloved.
Grijalva is from Tucson, and he's ranked one of the most liberal members of the House. He was the first in the House or Senate to endorse Bernie Sanders for president in 2015. Alaska Congressman Don Young often accuses Grijalva and other Democrats on the Resources Committee of reading environmentalist talking points about Alaska. But Grijalva sees it differently. He says championing environmental issues like the Arctic Refuge is a way of standing up against moneyed interests.
The caribou don't conduct a lot of fundraisers for us. And the wilderness can't write us checks. And these are all being sacrificed to satisfy this Republican obsession with opening up every acre of public land to drilling or mining.
This event was intended to highlight a new bill that would overturn last year's decision to open the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge to drilling. It has zero chance of passing now, with Republicans in charge of Congress. But Grijalva says it gives drilling opponents something to organize around. He ended the meeting a little abruptly with a glance at the clock.
Thank you. We have to clear out the room. They only give it to us until 5 minutes from now.
Grijalva says things will be different if his side wins the election, and he doesn't just mean room reservations. He says Democrats are itching to hold Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to account and maybe roll back recent changes to public lands policy. And he says one of their first bills will be the one to stop development in the Arctic Refuge.
This is something that you have to turn back. You can't negotiate a way out of this. You have to defeat it.
Among the speakers at the forum was Danetta Tritt, who is Gwich'in Athabascan. She spoke about how her people are tied to the caribou of the Arctic Refuge. Gwich'in opponents of drilling are frequent witnesses at forums like these. Democrats rarely invite leaders from Alaska Native corporations, which overwhelmingly want to see oil development in ANWR. But Grijalva says the corporate support shouldn't eclipse what the Gwich'in are saying. Tritt from Arctic Village just met Grijalva that day, but she says she was impressed with how warm he was and how intently he listened.
At the end of the meeting, he reached out both his hands and held mine and said, thank you. And then just coming out here in the hallway and giving me a hug and a kiss on the cheek and saying, we're going to do everything to take back the house.
Tritt says she'll go back home and tell her people, drilling opponents, they have a friend in Washington. And depending on what happens in November, that friend may be holding a chairman's gavel. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan is co-sponsoring a bill that would direct the Department of Veterans Affairs to research medicinal cannabis. The bill calls on the VA to look into the efficacy and safety of cannabis in the treatment of veterans diagnosed with chronic pain, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other conditions. 29 states have legalized the medicinal use of cannabis, but it still remains illegal under federal law. That's why it has been unclear if the VA is allowed to research cannabis, and the bill would specifically authorize the department to do so. Sullivan says the legislation has his support because he's heard veterans say in conversations and in public testimony that the VA should look at the benefits of cannabis.
Some have tried to find the benefits of dealing with pain through self-medicating marijuana, and doctors, particularly at the VA, need to understand this and how it can impact their diagnosis. And I have heard from veterans that this has been helpful.
Sullivan cites the overprescription of opioids and the rising number of overdose deaths in the past year as reasons veterans are looking for other treatment methods. Medicinal cannabis has been legal in Alaska for more than two decades. Alaska legalized its recreational use in 2015 through a ballot initiative. Sullivan has said he did not support it, but accepted the mandate of state voters when it passed. And Sullivan says views of cannabis are softening, in general, in Washington, D.C., after strong nationwide support for its medical use and the handful of states that have legalized its recreational use.
I think there's kind of a combination of people seeing the medical benefits, but also 10th Amendment elements of this, where the states have come out in statewide referendums like in Alaska, where they've come out in support. And even members of Congress who weren't supportive or aren't supportive of those kind of referendums are saying, hey, look, the people are speaking. This is what states have the right to do this.
Sullivan, a Republican, is the lone co-sponsor of the VA cannabis research bill by Senator John Tester, a Democrat from Montana. Alaska's Congressman Don Young is one of 55 co-sponsors on an identical bill in the U.S. House.
Governor Walker.
Alaska's trade delegation started their official visit to China this week in the city of Chengdu in southwest China at the annual China-U.S. Governors Forum. Governor Bill Walker is leading the delegation of Alaska companies on the 10-day trade mission. On Tuesday, American and Chinese companies and politicians had a full day of meetings and panel discussions, plus speed dating. From Alaska's energy desk in Chengdu, Rasha McChesney describes the scene.
Imagine flying all the way to China for a blind date, or waiting for that Alaskan from halfway around the world to make the first move. That's kind of what it was like for David McCarthy. He co-owns the 49th State Brewing Company, a craft beer brand with brew pubs in Denali and Anchorage. McCarthy sat down with several Chinese companies for a series of speed dates. And just like a real date, there were a lot of tentative ni haos, that's Mandarin for hello, glances toward interpreters, don't you wish you had one of those on a real date, and some surprises.
Very good.
And tax.
Tax free.
Tax free. McCarthy's partner on this date represents a pretty big market in the northern part of China. They want to pair McCarthy's beer with Alaska seafood and sell it in mobile carts.
A big market.
50 million. That's a big market.
Yeah, really big. The scale of the potential markets in China kind of dwarfs the market back home in Alaska.
750,000.
Oh, 700.
McCarthy and his 49th State Brewing Company co-owner are hoping to sell their beer directly into China. They talked about flying it into Beijing or Shanghai, anywhere that Chinese consumers can drink Alaska beer, then hop on a plane and come see the state for themselves. So did the speed dates work? McCarthy says they were promising.
We did trade numbers the last, guys, and maybe we're going to go out for drinks later, too.
The short meetings are a chance for Alaska businesses to introduce themselves directly to what they hope will be a giant market of new customers. They came after a long day of ceremony and seminars at the annual U.S. and China Governors Conference. It brings together U.S. state governors and regional Chinese leaders to talk about trade and investment. And in some cases, like this speed dating event, it allows for a lot of face-to-face meetings between people who could have mutual interests. After the dates, it wasn't immediately clear that anyone had landed that special someone, but several members of Alaska's delegation say they are astonished by the amount of interest in their products, their recipes, their brands. Crescent Juan is the head of the International Trade Department at Sichuan Jingang Flavor Company. She spent a lot of time talking to the four seafood companies that are part of the Alaska delegation. She and her boss are interested in incorporating Alaska salmon into their food flavorings. And she says these short, fast meetings left her wanting to know more.
Because I think the time is, it's so short. If I have more time, I think I have more chance to communication with the company and the people. We think it's the more time communication, more time for understanding.
To that end, many of the companies traded numbers and promised to follow up. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Chengdu, China.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, federal indictments are brought against a man charged with the 2016 killing of a Fairbanks policeman.
One count of using a firearm during a crime of violence, one count of stealing a firearm, and one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
A man already facing a murder charge in state court for shooting a Fairbanks police officer has been additionally charged with federal crimes. 30-year-old Anthony Jenkins Alexi of Fairbanks, accused of shooting Sergeant Alan Brandt in October 2016, has been indicted on federal gun charges related to the crime. U.S. Attorney for the District of Alaska Brian Schroeder announced the new charges this morning during a press conference at Fairbanks Police Department.
One count of using a firearm during a crime of violence, one count of stealing a firearm, and one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm.
The additional charges are related to Jenkins Alexi having a previous felony DUI conviction and his alleged stealing of Sergeant Brandt's service weapon and patrol vehicle after the shooting.
The charge of using a firearm during a crime of violence, as we charged it in this case, is a maximum sentence of life imprisonment.
The other federal charges could mean more time, all additional to the 99-year sentence Jenkins Alexi faces if convicted of first-degree murder in state court. Brandt was shot on a downtown street while responding to a call. Fairbanks Police Chief Eric Jukes noted in thanking state and federal authorities for their work on the case.
Clearly, the officers are out there doing a very hard job, putting a lot on the line, and doing a lot for this community. And so, as Sergeant Brandt said at one time, we need your support. I think this is a perfect example of that support that we need.
Jenkins Alexi was recorded on dash cam video from Brandt's patrol vehicle and subsequently confessed to the shooting, describing it as an act of vengeance for police killings of relatives and friends. Sergeant Brandt died 2 weeks after the shootings from complications during surgery to remove shrapnel from one of his eyes. Jenkins Alexi's murder trial in state court is scheduled to begin on September 10th. Three Unalaska residents will be honored tonight at the Anchorage Municipal Assembly on April 1st. Ronan Gray, Damian Lopez Plancarte, and Mary Hymas helped rescue a child from a crevasse on Portage Glacier. Their flight home had been canceled, so they went for a walk. Ronan Gray says they were approached by a man who said his son was trapped in the ice.
When I got to the crevasse and looked down, it was just black. You know, you couldn't really even see anything. And then I heard him whimpering, and I saw movement. I saw the top of his head. And that was when the extremity of, like, the situation really hit me, because I was frightened. Like, I couldn't even fathom going down there myself.
but Gray did climb into the crevasse. He says it was less than 2 feet wide. In his car, he had half of the things needed for ice climbing and rescue.
And then the other half, we just kind of put together, like I had a tow strap for a truck that we used in lieu of a rope. We used some webbing that you use in rock climbing and ice climbing for belay anchors and stuff. And then we just put it all together. It worked. It was strong, but it wasn't ideal.
The responders set up a rope and three people served as a human anchor while Gray was lowered 30 feet into the chasm.
The whole ordeal, once I got down into the hole, into the crack, we got him out of the crevasse in about an hour, and he'd been down there about an hour before he got there.
Gray says the child was only wearing a t-shirt and was hypothermic. Search and rescue volunteers took him to an ambulance where he warmed up. He walked away with only a few bruises. Gray is an experienced climber, but this was his first time participating in an ice rescue. After allegations that farmers market vendors were selling food that violated state food safety laws, the biggest farmers market in Kodiak is moving, and a new market is springing up where the old one used to be, bringing the number of markets in town to 3. Daisy Eaton with KMXT reports.
It's 40 degrees and pouring rain in Kodiak. But inside Judy Hamilton's greenhouse, it's downright balmy, and rows of vegetables are growing.
We have Chinese cabbage and bok choy, and lettuce, arugula, kale, Brussels sprouts, and a few sacrificial tomatoes.
For years, Hamilton has sold her produce at the Kodiak Farmers Market at the local fairgrounds. But this year, the market is moving after a controversy erupted about who should run it. Bernadette DePlazis has organized the market since it came together organically about 8 years ago.
Well, it kind of all began when a friend of mine and I were talking about our gardens and how we were getting a little tired of having to chase people down the road with bags of Swiss chard and kale. And my friend said, we should have a farmer's market. And I said, yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
The market flourished at the fairgrounds and expanded to include 20 to 30 vendors selling vegetables, fruit, arts, crafts, and more. But recently, DePlazis says, members of the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair Board, which runs the fairgrounds, began approaching her about taking over the market.
I think it may have begun last summer. I believe that one of the members of the fair board approached me at one of the later markets in the summer and said something to the effect of, we'd like to take over managing the market. At which time I said, oh, you guys have plenty on your plates. You don't need that too, and left it at that.
There was items that were being sold that were against state law. There was items being fried on scene in open flame. There was meat products being sold. There was dairy products being sold that were not legal. We tried to address this concern multiple times in different ways, and they were not being recognized.
That's Sadie McCusker, president of the Fair Board, who alleges the main reason they stepped in was food safety and liability concerns. State law allows vendors to sell cottage foods like jams, breads, and pastries without a permit. Food not allowed includes meat and fish products, baked goods that require refrigeration, and cheeses, basically anything that requires temperature control to ensure food safety. Packaged foods must be labeled.
We are the managers of the fairgrounds. We lease the property from the borough. So if state laws aren't being followed, the board's liable, and so is the borough.
As a result of the allegations, DePlazis recently moved the venue for the farmers market from the fairgrounds across town to the Kodiak Baptist Mission. Then McCusker announced that the fair board will host a new farmers market at the fairgrounds. In Kodiak, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
In Anchorage, complaining about the gloomy weather this spring has become something of a new pastime. But is the weather really worse than normal? According to Brian Brettschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment, the answer is no. Brettschneider told Andy Feit that since April 1st, the weather in Anchorage has been warmer and drier than normal.
It's been a couple degrees warmer than normal in Anchorage. In fact, it's been warmer than 80% of all April through, say, May 20th in Anchorage. So it's definitely been warmer than normal. I think where there might be a disconnect between what we've actually observed, what people seem to think that has been, is there hasn't been any really warm days here in South Central. So, for example, the warmest temperature so far this season has been 59 degrees. Normally, we would have had a 60-degree day by now. And in fact, the typical date for Anchorage would be May 14th. So there can be this disconnect where we can have no really warm days, but we can still be above normal. So that's kind of where we're at right now in South Central.
And what about wind and cloud cover? Do you think that's a factor?
Well, I think people really noticed when there's above normal clouds. People think, oh, it's been gray, and it keeps the sun from warming the ground up too much. We've been a little bit cloudier than normal, a couple of percent. You know, normally we would have 70% overcast since April, beginning of April, and we've had about 73 or 4%. So a little bit above normal, not anywhere near a high record amount. And then for the winds, we have been windier than normal, and we've been on the high range of wind. But again, not a record high wind, but we have had a number of really windy days.
And rain?
Rain has been, you know, this is our driest time of the year. So March, April, and May, the heart of our dry season, our three driest months of the year in Anchorage, and the three driest months statewide. We're actually running drier than normal. So rainfall is a little bit tricky in the dry season because average, when you're talking really low numbers, average is actually usually quite a bit above the median. So we like to use the median value. But even using medians, we've actually been drier than two-thirds of April and May so far. So definitely been a drier period than even most years during our dry season.
So what do you say to people who complain about this spring and say that they are sure that this is not normal?
When we talk about people's recollections, a lot of times people recall outlier events. So people, if there's a really cold week or two in the winter, they kind of think, oh, it was a really cold winter. Or if there was a really big snowstorm, they think, oh, it was a snowy winter. Kind of the same on the flip side for the warm season. You know, if you don't have those couple of really warm days, people think, oh, it's not been a warm spring or not been a warm summer. So it's you need to think of averages. Think of you know, many, many weeks or months, and not just a couple of those warm days. So our memories can sometimes deceive us to that extent.
And what has the picture been like statewide this spring?
Every place for the month of May, every place in Alaska has been above normal, except maybe down in Kodiak. I think they're a little bit below normal, but everywhere else has been above normal. So, you know, again, we're talking about averaging all those cooler days and all those warmer days. But for the most part, you know, it's been the story of the spring has been warmth.
Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist based in Anchorage with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. And a quick note, it did hit 60 degrees in Anchorage for the first time today. Glenn Hackney of Fairbanks has been fighting the same battle for more than 50 years. It starts every spring, and it's won with plastic bags and a pickup truck. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig has this profile.
This is the most famous pickup in Fairbanks. This little yellow pickup has been hauling trash around town for 25 years.
That's right. Hackney's big battle is garbage. In Fairbanks, his name is synonymous with the annual springtime cleanup day. But for 93-year-old Hackney, any day there's not snow on the ground is an opportunity for tidying up. Most of what Hackney picks up off the side of the road is pretty ho-hum. Paper cups, plastic bottles, kids' toys. But he's also encountered some stranger stuff, like a bowling ball and a gilded rose packed in a box.
So I figured it was a jilted lover. who tossed it out the window.
In late April, Hackney takes me on a Fairbanks trash tour in his famous pickup.
In my car, I've got three parking lot kisses.
Three parking lot kisses, you mean dents? You're nodding.
It showed up over the years, yeah.
Hackney moved to Alaska back in 1948. He spent most of his career working in concrete and construction and served 8 years in the state legislature. He started picking up trash his first spring in Fairbanks as one of the organizers of the community-wide cleanup day, and he's been a booster for the cause ever since.
It gets in your blood. I like to see a clean community. I'm frankly appalled at what visitors to Fairbanks would think about right now, driving along this section of highway that I'm going to show you in a few minutes.
We get out along a stretch of road that Hackney says is one of the biggest eyesores in town. There's something in particular he's here to get rid of.
We're looking at a mattress that somebody has lost off their pickup.
We haul it into the back of his truck.
Can we do it?
Yeah.
Again, Hackney is 93, but he's always had exceptional grit when it comes to improving the street view in Fairbanks. Back in 1992, he actually got hit by a car while doing it. The car broke both his legs, and he had to have surgery. That might give the average person pause about continuing. Not Hackney.
You know what they say, Camaros never strike twice in the same place.
Hackney would like to be clear. His enthusiasm is for clean roads, not necessarily the activity of cleaning them. He says he'd prefer it if there was no trash to pick up in the first place. To that end, there are some changes he'd like to see around town. More people covering the backs of their trucks so stuff doesn't fly out, and people with mattresses in the back driving just a bit slower.
They simply drive too fast, and the law of physics, which is immutable, takes over, and they fly out the back of the pickup.
Before I get out of Hackney's truck, I ask him if he has any parting words for the people of Alaska.
Always keep busy, never give up, and pick up your darn trash.
From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Casey Grove and Annie Fight in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Daisha Eaton in Kodiak, and Rasha McChesney in Chengdu, China. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state. Seasonal summer routes now available to Cordova, Anchorage, and Valdez. Information available at flyraven.com. Opioids are sometimes prescribed for pain. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Never share your opioids with family, friends, or anyone at all. It may cause addiction, trouble with the law, overdose, and death. Always securely store your opioids away from children and others who may misuse them. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.